it's really important that we not get confused about our practice. And sometimes the environment of practice is actually a little confusing. At heart, you could say, it's extremely simple. So why dress it up with various decorations and funny clothing and so forth? And why have somebody sitting up front and talking to all of you as though I had something to impart, but I can't really tell you what it is? So it's already kind of confusing. And then we say things like, well, you know, I don't really have anything to impart. And then people sometimes think, well, and what are we doing here? And I'm sure by now you've probably all heard that we don't try to acquire anything from our practice. And even though the Buddhist sutras make it sound like, you know, we're at the end, rather, you know, the very beginning of this enormously long trail. And somewhere way at the end, in some exalted realm, are the Buddhas. Are you sure this is going to stay on? There, I think that'll do it.
It has to be bent just the right way.
Karen has something to impart.
Well, I don't know. Try that.
Okay.
Maybe talk a little louder too if you could.
Okay. So why then is there even a hint of like hierarchy in Buddhism? You know, why are there teachers and humble students? Well, I think the idea is to find some arrangement where people can feel some encouragement to follow their way of practice. And sure enough, everyone is a little bit different. So then the secret is, there's no secret to impart, which is kind of confusing. Anybody confused? Yeah? Yeah? Well, there you are.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
That people are confused? It is if they don't get discouraged about their confusion. if the confusion is experienced as kind of rich, that's okay. But if people get bummed out because they're confused, then, you know, then they might give up. And not in the way that we want you to give up, either. We, all of us, not I, but we all want each other to give up and just sit. And this turns out to be kind of tricky. Because no sooner do you think that you have given up and are just sitting, you realize, oh no, wait, I haven't. So if what we're doing is not encouraging, then we should, you know, go back to the drawing board and figure out why not, and maybe what would be encouraging. So the teacher's job, insofar as she has one, is to help people find out what's encouraging. So, as Suzuki Roshi said, so they can just go on and on and on. And, of course, in Buddhism, the way we tell the story, that means not just this life. All the countless lives to come. So I deliberately wore this raksu. This is my teacher's very presentable calligraphy. And the Chinese says, I think we've already talked about this, but at my age, I get to repeat myself. So it says, beneath the patched robe, what? And this turns out to be a really important question. Because human beings, you know, the way we are, we might stop at the robe. The robe might stop us. And we may think that, man, I got to get me one of those. Maybe it's just a very tiny little voice that says, man, I got to get me one of those. And that's okay if it's just one of the many little voices that we have telling us stuff that's not very useful. But if we believe that, then our practice will get lopsided very quickly. And various strange things will happen in the Sangha as people kind of jockey for position. And this does happen. I'm very grateful to my teacher for inscribing this raksu, which they gave me when they asked me to be the boss at my temple, which is already a little bit of a problem, but okay. Since you ask, I said, all right, I'll do that. But he also said to his students, he said, do not play favorites. And pretty much he doesn't. So I found that to be a very good lesson, because sometimes it's tempting. It's like, oh, I really like that student. That student's really sharp and good looking. So I think I'll be very nice to that student. And these others, not so much. And again, that happens. And that means something's cockeyed. And sometimes, because it's kind of fun, the teacher may notice that some people are, they've stopped at the robe and are thinking, I got to get me one of those. And then the teacher has a little fun going, anybody interested in one of these? Come talk to me. And then once again, weird things start to happen. So I'm reminding myself and anybody else who's interested to be really careful about that. And when Buddha says, you know, I taught for 40 years and I didn't say a word. There is an extremely important non-teaching there. If you practice in this way that we kind of have for a while, and if you do what I did, which is kind of the apprenticeship model, you know what I mean? You apprentice yourself to someone. Just because maybe you've discovered that when you're with that person, you feel encouraged. So you hang out with them for maybe quite a while. And when you do, for instance, some people tell me, I sound like my teacher when I give a talk, which is really embarrassing, and I'm definitely not trying to do that. But an impression gets made. And many Zen sayings and stuff I hear in my teacher's voice. So for some reason right now, I'm remembering when he quoted our great ancestor, Tiantong Rujing, who was Dogen's teacher. And Rujing's something like, living is like wearing a shirt. Dying is like dropping your pants. And my teacher added, this one moment has to be it. And that is the honest truth. So the other day, I was engaging in the usual desperate search to find something to talk about. And I wasn't looking for this particular campfire tale, but for the last day or so, it keeps coming to my mind. And it's very unusual. In fact, I do not, at the moment, know of another story, campfire tale, in our little Zen, like those spooky stories you tell around the campfire at camp. You know, we have those too, and they're also spooky, but in a usually different way. Anyway, I don't know of another of our campfire tales where the word love appears. I only know this one. So maybe if some of you know some others, you can talk to me after and tell me about them, but this is the only one I know. And let's see, it involves two of our ancestors as we tell the tale. And by the way, remember, especially the Chinese and Japanese names, are ungendered. So we do not know whether they were male or female, even though certain persons tell the story as though they were all men. But that is a presumption. I am quite sure some of them were women. And the fact that we've lost that key is kind of embarrassing, in a way. Although, in my experience of monastic training, there is a sense in which gender kind of falls away. It's kind of strange. So it's like, you know, if your teacher were a man or a woman, it's kind of like not totally irrelevant. Anyway, these two persons of whatever gender, one is Tonggan Daopi, and his or her student, Tonggan Guanzhi. And yeah, you don't have to remember these difficult Chinese names. But they had the same first name, Tonggan. And one day, this so-called student, Guanzhi, asks his teacher, Daoqi, a very strange and very un-Zen question. He says, teacher, an ancient sage said, what worldly people love, I do not love. And I wonder, teacher, what do you love? So Daopi was quiet for quite a while. And finally, he sighs and says, been there, done that. And his student wakes up. Isn't that weird?
He didn't really say, been there, done that.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. This gentleman is objecting to my translation from the Chinese. But I actually had that same thought, and I realized, you know, what she actually said is not as important as where in my body mind is this story? Where are all of these stories? If they're not in this blood, they have no meaning. So when I read this story, I heard Dao Pi say, been there, done that.
So you do have something to impart.
Shoot. Well, in that case, duck, okay? Anyway, like I said, I don't think there is another story where the word love appears. Now, Daopi's saying, been there, done that, was not meant to be dismissive. When you practice the Buddha way for, I don't know, maybe long enough or something, the question, what do you love, is not so simple. Because kind of, we kind of love everything. So to say, Well, what do you love? You can get real silly and recite your list of favorite ice creams. Or you could realize, you know, kind of everything. Again? That's okay. What'd you say?
I said, what do you not love?
That's another way to put it. What do you not love? And again, you know, you can start listing things. I don't love being sick. I don't love when people are mean to me. And that list, of course, is endless. So, been there, done that, was Dalgi's way of saying, I'm sorry, I don't know. Everything. Madame.
Because he has embraced everything that he's met?
Oh, no, because.
No,
sorry.
What
if you like.
Is not difficult for one who has no preferences.
Yeah. There's that one too. This is often misunderstood, I just want to say. You know, if you don't have any preferences, you're not going to live very long. So, the great ancestor Sun Tzu, who made that remark, didn't mean anything silly like, well, I remember I was serving myself salad once at Zen Center there in San Francisco. And I was, I admit, kind of interested in the croutons. And somebody next to me said, we're not supposed to have any preferences. Yes. And I snorted derisively and went on hunting for croutons. So that's not what Sun Tzu meant. Right? Sun Tzu meant life does not stop at the skin. So it gets kind of tricky when you're trying to choose between yourself and others. So that wasn't the story I was going to tell, but it kept intruding in front of my face, so I had to tell it. The story I was going to tell was about this quote. Asking beneath the robe, what is about the heart of practice? Never mind the robe. What's the heart of practice? And that story takes place between one of those two people I was just talking about, the student, he or she, who asked, "What do you love, teacher?" Later, wound up in a position of encouraging others. Somebody asked him or her to do that. And there was a student named Liang Shan. And the Yangshan asked Dalpi that question. Under the robe, what is it? And interestingly, Dalpi replied first with a quotation from a long ago, very, very famous ancestor, one of my favorites, Dongshan Liangye, who was heard to say, "The most painful thing is not hell. The most painful thing is to wear this robe and not understand the great matter of birth and death." So that's what Guanzhe said. And then to Liangshan, and then he said, "So now you ask me again." So Liangshan says, "Beneath the Buddha robe, what?" And Guanzhe says, Intimate. Just like no preferences isn't about croutons or ice cream, intimate is not about, you know, kissy face. Not that that's excluded exactly. But in our language, you know, intimacy is like, romance or sexuality, various associations. It doesn't necessarily occur to us that it means life does not stop at the skin. We are always heart to heart. And above and beyond any and all robes, there's that. Banish all hierarchies, there's still that. So I'm trying to be an authentic Zen abbot, and so when I tell these stories, I'm trying to. One of the traditions, as you may know, is you write a little poem about it. So I'm trying to write my own little poems, and mostly they're not very interesting. But I thought, oh, I should make the effort anyway. You know, it's good for my practice, as they say. So I wrote a little poem about this story. And let me see, I think it goes, "The current of life washes every shore. Beneath the clothes, everyone is naked. To approach closely, drop all pretense, stand in the golden wind with Buddhas and ancestors. What does the wind say? Intimate. Well, I think I've done enough damage, so maybe y'all have some comments or questions. Now that we've clarified everything, and you're not confused anymore, or if you are, you don't mind. Yes?
And
life is like wearing a shirt.
Death is like dropping your pants.
Yes.
And there was something else.
This one brief moment has to be it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that?
No. I'm sorry, but no.
Can these be interpreted in different ways? I mean, can there be several layers?
Actually, no.
Pun intended.
Yeah. Actually, no.
No.
No. No layers.
Do they have Chinese literary references?
Probably, but I don't know what those are, so it doesn't matter. If I don't know the Chinese, I make up stuff like, been there, done that. Yes.
Well, I had a thought. I thought it was an interesting exchange when I love all things, and she asked the question, what do you not love? Mm-hmm. And I thought about that for a second. And I've been going through a time of change and turmoil and suffering, and these are all things that I don't like to feel. But then I started to think about that and was like, well, it's very interesting. I hate this stuff. But at the same time, it's building constructs up in my mind, things that I'm grasping at, as painful as this stuff is. And it's, is it love?
Good question. Yeah.
I guess I'm not going to get an answer. So here you go.
No, I'm not in the answers business. There you go. No? Did you have a question, Maestro? No? Okay.
I'm just holding the mic.
You're just the mic guy. Okay. All right.
When we feel heart to heart with many people, it makes life rather busy.
Yeah. So those are good times to remember that this one moment is it. Then, you know, maybe we won't feel so busy.
We don't need to keep checking off the hearts.
Boy, I hope not. If so, I'm way behind. You, sir, recently married. Congratulations. So I heard. People are still talking about it.
The officiant was outstanding.
Oh.
I must concur.
So when the student asked about love and the teacher responded, been there, done that, could that also be been there, am that?
I don't know why not.
When I find it interesting that that's the only campfire tale where love
isn't that strange
is mentioned.
Now,
but isn't
now there are hundreds of those campfire tales, and I'm not saying I've seen every one, but this I have seen a lot of them, and this is the only one.
But isn't bodhicitta in many of them?
Bodhicitta?
Yeah.
Yes.
So love's in there.
Oh, bodhicitta, love, not exactly the same.
Mm.
No, I don't think so. Do you know the literal meaning?
Of bodhicitta, the awakened heart.
Oh.
The heart-mind. Awakening.
The mind of awakening is one way it's translated. So this is very interesting because in the West, I've noticed that our relentless interest in love has kind of entered Buddha's teaching, and various odd things are coming out. For instance, what was I reading the other day? Oh, one of the Dalai Lama's books. And let's see, what was he saying? Something like, I can't quite recall, but the paragraph heading or something was about love. And then you read further, it turns out he's talking about a very traditional Buddhist teaching, like a meditation. And love wasn't really in there. So it was interesting to give the paragraph that heading. But actually, Buddha himself, herself, really did not talk about love. Buddha talked about maitri. And as you know, the root of that word means to be a friend. So, when I come up here and see you lovely people, and if it's one of the nights where we chant the loving kindness meditation, I always grit my teeth a little bit when it comes to the line suffusing love over the entire world. I sort of, it's actually maybe loving kindness or friendliness. It's not exactly love, because in the West there's a heavy freight of romantic stuff that doesn't really fit, you know, in the kind of Buddhist realm of things. Why? Because that kind of love is kind of problematic, because it is very difficult not to find oneself cultivating attachment. And if one does that, the result is suffering. So it's unlikely that Buddha would be saying, you've got to have love. But Buddha does say, we should have the mind of friendly caring for every being. And that's a little different. And bodhicitta, when we hear that there's such a thing as awakening, and that that becomes a tremendous engine of loving kindness, of friendliness for all beings, and that starts to move our life, that is bodhicitta sprouting in us. So it's not exactly love. Again, love is not like excluded, but it's a little different. I was going to say one quick thing. I decided this evening before coming over here that my epitaph should be, it's just my opinion. So that's going to be it. Right? Did you have a question?
Yes. I was thinking when you said that was the only time that love was mentioned as a word. But I'm also thinking that it doesn't mean that love wasn't present.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And I think of my experience when I'm reaching for love, when I'm wanting to be loved, when I do things to be loved, I often end up not feeling love.
Mm-hmm.
And so the opposite effect happens when I'm reaching for it.
Yeah.
You know, when I do things and I think someone should say,
we love you.
We love you.
Yeah.
We appreciate you.
Yeah.
And so when that doesn't happen, then I get angry.
Yeah.
And now instead of love, I'm feeling maybe something the opposite.
Yep. Well said. Thank you. I don't have a solution or anything, but you described it as well as I could. Yes, Oscar.
I'd like to make a gentle defense of the word love.
Please. Make a spirited defense of the word love, if you want.
And I appreciate the way it's used popularly nowadays, and just as you described. But it does have broader meanings, mm-hmm. even in contemporary culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've forgotten what they are, but probably you know that the Greeks had several words for what is translated in this one portmanteau word in English. Uh-huh. So that's part of the difficulty, perhaps.
Yeah, similarly in Sanskrit, there are a number of words that could be translated as love, and they are drawing various distinctions. Erotic love, fraternal or cisternal, is that a word? Love. Sororal. Parental love. Spiritual love. These all have different words. And English doesn't have that so much. You've got to specify somehow. And yeah, Greek, eros, agape, kakaretos, and maybe some others. And those are all a bit different. Yeah.
Yeah. She loves you.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's right. Well, that's true. It's just it's a little slippery there. It's true. All you need is love. But how many of us have got that down pat? You know? I don't.
And the dilemma of self-love.
Yeah. Buddha, talks about various ways in which we get tied up with ourselves. And there's three terms. There's atma-mana, atma-sneha, and atma-moha. These are three problems with the assumption of the permanently existing self. Atma-mana is self-pride. Atma-sneha is self-affection, not in a really good way. And atma-moha is just confusion about the self. Right? So this is all stuff you can actually see working in you and devolve from the assumption that each of us is an ultimately existing separate critter. And if Buddha had one critically important teaching, it's that you will never find such a critter. Go ahead, look. Look very carefully. You will not find it. And that's pretty significant, actually. I don't think before Buddha's time anybody said that. I think he was maybe the first, or she was the first to say, go ahead, look, you will not find. There are interesting repercussions of that. For instance, liberation. Okay, my nose is running and I can't reach my handkerchief, so is this, I have one, but I'm trying to actually stop now. And poor Rafael is going to go get me some Kleenex. It's okay. Thank you. You're lovable. Well, I guess that's about enough. Yeah. Thank you all very much.